All right, so welcome to another deep dive, you guys.
Delighted to be here.
Today we're going to be exploring the Gospel of Mark,
okay,
chapters 11 and 12.
All right.
And these chapters are super interesting because they really dig into these ideas of faith and authority.
Yeah.
So get ready for some parables, some power struggles.
All of a good power
struggle. Some really thought-provoking questions about where we place our trust.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And our source material today is a blog post called Understanding Authority and Faith in Mark 11:12, and it's from soulsanctuary.host.
Okay, great.
And it was published just today, December 4th, 2024.
Very timely.
Very timely.
Very relevant.
So one thing that I found really fascinating about this post was how it frames faith.
Yeah.
It's not just about, like, you know, believing certain things.
Right.
But it's about this active energy.
Yeah.
That shapes how we connect with the divine.
I think that's such a good way to put it.
Yeah, and the post actually points to a line in Mark 11:24 that says, and I quote, "Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours."
Wow.
So it kind of makes you wonder, right?
It does.
Is belief like a prerequisite for divine intervention?
It's an interesting thought, for sure.
It is. And it kind of reminds me of the whole, you know, ask, believe, receive concept that we hear about sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because Mark is saying that belief, it actually sets the stage for something bigger to happen.
Like a foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
It's not just like wishful thinking. Right.
Exactly. How?
It's more about aligning yourself with the possibility of the divine working in your life.
Aligning yourself. Yeah.
I like that.
It's not passive.
It's active.
It's very active, yeah. Which is interesting because when we see Jesus interacting with the authorities in Jerusalem, things get a little, well...
A little tense.
A little tense.
Yeah, and in Mark 11:27-30, they, you know, these religious authorities, they come right out and they ask Jesus, by what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority to do them?
Bold.
So bold.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Were they, like, threatened by Jesus's popularity or something?
I mean, it seems like it, right? I mean, especially if you think about like all the stuff that Jesus was doing, you know, like healing people and driving out demons and teaching with such authority.
Yeah.
Like it definitely would have challenged the status quo, right?
Right.
I mean, think about it. If you were in their shoes, you'd probably be a little threatened too.
Oh, for sure.
But what I find really interesting is how Jesus responds to them.
Yeah.
He doesn't just give them like a straight answer. You know?
Right.
He's much more clever than that.
It's classic Jesus.
Yeah.
He turns the question back on them, right?
He does, yeah.
Asking them about John the Baptist's authority.
Which is so smart because it forces them to think,
yeah,
to question their own assumptions about authority.
And that's a challenge for us today, too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, who do we see as authorities in our own lives?
Right.
And why?
Yeah. Are we just accepting authority because of tradition or position? Or are we actually thinking critically about it?
Yeah, and I think that's something that we'll continue to explore as we dive deeper into these chapters.
Definitely.
So one of the ways that Jesus really gets his message across these chapters is through parables.
Definitely.
And one that really stands out to me is the parable of the vineyard in Mark 12:1-9.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It's a great one, right? Because it's all about this vineyard owner who leases his land to tenants. But when he sends his servants to collect his share of the fruit, they're mistreated, beaten, even killed.
It's brutal.
It is brutal.
And it's like, okay, so what's going on here? Like, it's about so much more than just grapes and land, right?
That's a metaphor, right?
Right. The vineyard is like a symbol of Israel. The tenants represent the religious leaders, and the owner is God.
And when the owner finally sends his own son,
right,
representing his ultimate love and sacrifice, they reject him and kill him too.
Which is like, whoa.
It's heavy.
It's a heavy parable.
And it makes you think, like, are we so caught up in our own agendas in following the letter of the law that we forget about the spirit of the law?
They're like the love and compassion that should be at the heart of it all.
Right. And that's what this parable is really challenging us to think about.
Yeah. It's a powerful message.
And then, like, right after this parable,
okay,
Mark connects it to this whole rejected stone metaphor in Mark 12:10-12, where Jesus, using imagery from Psalm 118, identifies himself as the cornerstone that the builders rejected.
So even though he's essential, he's overlooked, dismissed.
Totally. And the blog post really emphasized the consequences of that rejection,
yeah,
both for individuals and communities.
Yeah, it's not something to be taken lightly.
So we're seeing this theme of authority come up again and again. And in Mark 12:13-15, we see another challenge to Jesus's authority, this time from the Pharisees and Herodians.
Those guys.
Yeah, and they're trying to trap him with this question about paying taxes to Caesar. It's like they're playing political chess.
They are.
Trying to get him to say something that'll get him in trouble.
Exactly.
So the Pharisees, they oppose Roman rule, and the Herodians support it.
Right.
So no matter what Jesus says, they think they've got him cornered.
They think they've won.
They think so.
But Jesus, he doesn't take the bait.
No, he doesn't.
He asks for a denarius, points out Caesar's image on it, and says, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's."
Such a classic line.
It is.
And when I first read that, I was like, okay, so it's about separating church and state, right?
Right. But it's deeper than that, I think. It's about recognizing that we have responsibilities.
Yes.
In both the secular and the spiritual realms.
And Mark actually goes a bit further in 12:17, highlighting that we need to find this balance between civic and spiritual authorities.
So it's not just about separating them. It's about finding a way for them to coexist.
Right. And sometimes that means making tough choices. You know, standing up for what we believe in.
Absolutely.
Even if it goes against the grain.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Now, before we move on, I want to circle back to something that the blog post really emphasized.
Okay.
And that is forgiveness.
Oh, yeah, that's huge.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's a key theme in these chapters, particularly in Mark 11:25-26, where Jesus makes it clear that holding on to anger and resentment, it can actually block our connection with the divine.
It's like a wall.
It is.
Yeah.
And he says, and whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also, who is in heaven, may forgive you your trespasses.
So he's linking our forgiveness of others
yeah.
with receiving God's forgiveness.
It's interesting, right?
It is. It suggests that they're intertwined somehow. Like our ability to forgive others is directly connected to our own spiritual well-being.
Yeah, it's like this two-way street, you know?
It is.
We forgive others, and in turn, we open ourselves up to receiving God's forgiveness.
And the blog post really challenged me to think about how often I'm holding on to grudges or resentment.
Right.
And how that might be impacting my relationship with God.
Yeah, it's a tough question, but it's an important one.
It is.
So I think we've covered a lot of ground here in this first part of our deep dive into Mark chapters 11 and 12.
We have. It's been great.
But there's still so much more to explore.
I know. I can't wait to get into the rest of it.
Me neither. So stay tuned, folks.
Don't go anywhere.
We'll be right back with more after a quick break.
We'll see you soon. So, you know, it's not always easy to let go of those grudges.
No, it's not. It's a process.
It is.
And sometimes it takes time.
Absolutely.
But I think it's definitely worth it.
Oh, for sure.
You know, you mentioned the theme of authority coming up again and again in these chapters.
Yeah, and in Mark 11:27-30, we see another confrontation.
Right.
This time with the chief priests, scribes, and elders.
Right, in the temple.
Right. They come to Jesus and basically demand to know where he gets off doing the things he's doing.
Right, like cleansing the temple, healing people.
Exactly.
Like they're saying, who do you think you are?
Right. What gives you the right? Exactly. And just like with the Pharisees and the Herodians, Jesus, he doesn't give them a straight answer.
Nope.
He turns the question back on them.
Asking about John the Baptist.
Exactly.
Such a good move.
It's like he's saying, okay, let's talk about authority, but before I talk about mine, let's talk about yours.
Right. Like, where did John get his authority?
Exactly.
It's fascinating to me how Jesus always seems to be a few steps ahead.
I know, right?
He knows their intentions, and he uses their own questions to expose the flaws in their thinking.
It's like a verbal chess match.
It is.
And Jesus is always the grandmaster.
He always makes the winning move.
Always.
And I think what he's doing here is highlighting that true authority isn't about holding a position or enforcing rules.
Right. It's about something deeper, something more profound.
So it's not about who you are, but what you represent.
Exactly. And that's such a powerful message for us today.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we see this all the time, right?
All the time.
People in positions of power who abuse that power for their own gain.
Right. In politics and business, even in our personal relationships.
It's like they forget that true authority, the kind that Jesus embodies, is about service.
Yeah.
About love.
About lifting others up, not pushing them down.
Exactly.
It makes me think of that quote from Galatians.
Okay.
For freedom, Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery.
It's like Jesus is showing us a different way to live,
nice.
A way that's rooted in freedom and love, not control and fear.
And that brings us back to that idea of faith as an active force.
Right. It's not enough to just sit back and believe in Jesus.
Yeah, we have to live out his teachings.
We have to embody his love in the world.
It's about taking action, standing up for what's right, even when it's hard.
Even when it's really hard.
And that brings us to another one of Jesus's powerful parables, the parable of the vineyard in Mark 12:1-9.
Okay, this parable is so rich with symbolism.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, the vineyard owner, he leases his vineyard to tenants who represent the religious leaders of Israel.
Right.
And when the owner sends servants to collect his share of the fruit, they are beaten, mistreated, even killed.
They kill the son, too.
I know, right?
It's like such a powerful image of rejection.
It is.
Of refusing to acknowledge the love and grace that's being offered.
And, you know, I think there's a danger for us today reading this parable and thinking, oh, those bad tenants, thank goodness I'm not like them.
Right.
But I think it's a challenge for all of us to examine how we're receiving God's love in our own lives.
Definitely.
Are we nurturing it? Are we allowing it to bear fruit? Or are we rejecting it maybe in more subtle ways?
Maybe we're not literally killing messengers like in the parable.
Right.
But are we ignoring that quiet voice inside, urging us to do the right thing?
Or are we choosing comfort over courage? It's tough to think about, but I think it's important.
Yeah, it is.
And then we have the rejected stone metaphor, building upon that idea of rejection.
Right.
Jesus, quoting Psalm 118 in Mark 12:10-12, identifies himself as the cornerstone that the builders rejected.
It's an image of something essential being overlooked, dismissed.
Which seems to be a recurring theme in Jesus' ministry.
It does, doesn't it?
He's constantly being challenged, rejected, even by those who should be welcoming him.
It makes you wonder, why do people reject what they need most?
Right.
But it also makes me think about all the times I've felt underestimated, overlooked, even rejected.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that even Jesus, the Son of God, experienced those same feelings.
That's powerful.
It is. And, you know, it's a message of hope, too.
Okay.
Because even though he was rejected, Jesus ultimately triumphed.
Right.
And that gives me hope that even when we face rejection, even when things are tough, there's a bigger plan at work.
So if you're listening to this and you're feeling discouraged, maybe you have dreams that others don't understand.
Talents that haven't been recognized.
This passage reminds us that you're in good company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even Jesus was underestimated.
And speaking of being underestimated, let's talk about the trap set by the Pharisees and Herodians in Mark 12:3-10-15.
Oh, those guys.
They try to corner Jesus with this question about paying taxes to Caesar.
Right. It's such a clever political maneuver.
It's like they've got him in a no-win situation.
I think so.
If he says yes, pay taxes, he risks alienating his followers who resent Roman rule.
Mm-hmm.
But if he says, no, don't pay taxes, he could be arrested for inciting rebellion.
Right. So how does he get out of this one?
Well, he does it with wisdom.
Okay.
As always.
I love it.
He asks for a denarius, points out Caesar's image on it, and says, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's.
Such a classic response.
I know, right?
It's more than clever, though. I think it's profound.
It is.
He's not just talking about taxes, you know?
Right.
He's talking about recognizing the different spheres of authority in our lives.
Yes.
We have responsibilities as citizens of our earthly nations, but we also have responsibilities to a higher power, to God.
And Mark 12:1-17 really drives that point home.
Right. It's about finding that balance.
Yeah.
Living in the world, but not being of the world.
It's a challenge that we still grapple with today, don't we?
Oh, absolutely.
How do we live out our faith in a world that often seems at odds with our values?
Right. How do we engage in politics and social issues without compromising our commitment to God?
Big questions.
It's about finding that space where our faith informs our actions.
Yeah.
Where we can be both good citizens and faithful followers of Christ. Yeah, it's a tough balance for sure.
It is. And, you know, it's something that Jesus himself had to navigate, as we see in these chapters of Mark.
Right.
You know, he's constantly being challenged by those who question his authority.
Yeah, it's true. And one of the things that strikes me is how Jesus responds to these challenges.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't shy away from them, but he also doesn't get like dragged into these big arguments or power struggles.
Mm-hmm.
He always seems to respond with this wisdom and grace.
It's amazing. Like when the chief priests and scribes and elders, they question his authority in Mark 11:2730.
Right.
They demand to know, like, where he gets the right to do the things he's been doing.
Yeah, and instead of getting defensive or like asserting his divine authority, you know, Jesus turns the question back on them.
Classic Jesus.
Right. Asking about John the Baptist.
Love it.
So smart.
It's like he's saying, okay, so we're going to talk about authority, but before we talk about mine, let's talk about yours.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he forces them to examine their own assumptions and biases.
Yeah, and by doing so, he exposes the hypocrisy and the inconsistency in their thinking.
Yeah.
You know, they can't condemn Jesus without also condemning John, whom they had previously recognized as a prophet.
Right. It's a total checkmate.
It is. It is.
It makes you think about where we get our own sense of authority from, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Is it based on tradition or social status or what other people think? Or is it based on something deeper, something more, you know, intrinsic?
Yeah, those are good questions to ask ourselves.
And, yeah.
And I think the blog post touches on something really important here.
Okay.
This idea that true authority, it's rooted in humility and service.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's not about power over others. Mm-hmm. It's about empowering others.
Yeah, it's not about lording it over people, but about, like, lifting them up.
Exactly.
And that kind of brings us back to that idea of faith as an active force, right?
Yeah.
It's not enough to just believe in God.
Right.
We have to live out our faith in tangible ways.
And that's where I think this whole concept of bearing fruit comes in.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, you know, in the parable of the vineyard, the tenants are condemned not just for rejecting the owner, but for failing to produce good fruit.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a powerful reminder that faith without works is dead.
So it's not enough to just go through the motions to say we believe.
Yeah.
We have to actually live it out.
I got to walk the walk.
Day in and day out.
Yeah, our actions, our choices.
Those are the fruits of our faith.
Exactly. And those fruits, as described in Galatians 5.22-23, are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control.
Those are good fruits.
They are good fruits. And these aren't things that we can force or manufacture. You know, they grow organically from a life that's rooted in faith.
It's like tending a garden, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You can't just plant the seeds and expect them to grow on their own.
Nope.
You got to water them. You got to weed them. You got to nurture them.
And in the same way, we have to cultivate these fruits of the Spirit in our own lives.
That's good.
Yeah, and that's where trust comes in, you know, that active faith that we keep talking about. It's that belief that God is at work in us, even when we can't see it.
Right.
Even when things are tough.
Yeah.
It's that trust that empowers us to keep going, to keep growing, to keep bearing fruit.
So to bring this all back to you, our listener, what does this mean for your life? What are some key takeaways from our deep dive into Mark chapters 11 and 12?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways is that faith, it's not passive.
Right.
It's not just about believing certain things. It's about living them out, embodying them in the world.
Yeah.
It's about trusting in God's power to work through you, even when things are difficult. And it's about recognizing that true authority, it isn't about wielding power, but about serving others and pursuing justice.
It's also about being mindful of where we place our trust.
Right.
How we respond to authority figures, and the role that forgiveness plays in our spiritual lives.
Yeah, those are all key things to consider.
These chapters in Mark, they really encourage us to examine those areas in our own lives.
They do.
Like, where are we placing our trust? Are we responding to authority in a way that aligns with our values? And are we holding on to any anger or resentment that might be blocking our connection with God?
You know, it's a lot to think about, but hopefully this deep dive has given you some food for thought, some new perspectives to consider as you continue on your own journey of faith.
That's what we hope for.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you found it insightful and thought-provoking.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.
We'll see you next time.